on for Y'all with another day, another 50 cents. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon with you. And our guest today is me.
Oh, yes.
Or our guest today is you.
No, thank you for joining us.
Well, goodbye. World's shortest podcast. Hi, how are
you? No, you did. That was your first invention, the world's shortest podcast. What was that called?
Okay, you got 5 minutes.
Okay, you got 5 minutes, Bob. And tell us the pitfalls of moving.
Well, I think everybody's been through it a few times, and I certainly have.
Oh.
But if you forget what a colossal hassle it is, be reminded.
Whew.
It's all encompassing, you know. Every second of your life is devoted to what about this, what about that. Yesterday was part one of moving day. So they picked up all my stuff, and today they're delivering it to the new place.
Wow, good.
Which is under renovation. The entire main floor is under renovation.
So where is everything going? Into the basement?
Well, the garage or the basement. I hope mostly the garage. The dilemma with all this is partly my stupidity, is that, well, it's mostly my stupidity.
I was going to say, where's the partly part come in?
Well, no, it's mostly. Maybe entirely. Was agreeing to start the renovation in the middle of a move. So now I have a crap load of stuff and no place to put it. And I'm going to be living in the basement of the new house for at least 2 months, probably three, maybe four, who knows? And surrounded by boxes. And the dilemma, of course, is every box is labeled, but what boxes am I going to need over the next 2 or 3 months? And what boxes will I not need?
Well, but did you not do the classic, I should just pack a suitcase for myself as well?
Well, no, but I'm staying in this house for the next week.
Okay.
I essentially now own two houses.
Okay.
Anyway, more information.
Sorry for laughing. I just,
you can laugh all you want.
We moved three times in 3 years and vowed never to do it again. And three times in 3 years was just painful.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. And then, we've been able to avoid it for 29 more. So,
well, we'll see what happens with this place.
Well, good luck.
Masai Ujiri has come out of his cocoon.
Yes.
Or his dark little closet and decided to finally say something. And we're going to address that. It's just John and I today. We have no guest that was willing to put up with Shannon. And so we'll endeavor to find somebody tomorrow. But a little bit on Masai, maybe the Blue Jays, NHL putting logos on uniforms. I know John watched first episode of Hard Knocks with the Dallas
I watched
Cowboys.
The whole thing. I watched the whole thing. I watched all of them.
Oh, you watched all of them?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we may get into that. I haven't watched the damn thing. Back with the program after these messages. It's McCowan and Shannon. So Masai Ujiri has been, well, he's never been extremely public or verbose. He used to come on the radio program periodically. Now, we didn't ask him all that often, but he was usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But he really has gone into hiding the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not here to question that. That's entirely his decision, his right to do whatever he wants to do. I suspect that some of it had to do with that incident in Oakland or San Francisco during the final game of the championship season.
But there was
litigation.
He was proved totally innocent.
I understand, but there was litigation, and I think that kind of, you know, he probably got some legal advice, you know, lay low, you know, out of fear of saying something. I mean, this is the same guy that, you know, used a significant profanity in public in the square when they were playing the
Brooklyn Nets. $25,000 later.
Yeah, which was probably cheap. It was a cheap fine, I think. But nonetheless, and not because he's had his wrist slapped, but just, you know, I think those around him probably said, look, you know, you, if you, the more you do, the greater the chance you'll say something you don't want to say.
Yeah. That's, by the way, I think that statement you just made, Bob, is true for anybody at any point now. And I think that that's one of the reasons why we do get less public appearances from management guys. I really do. I mean, because the fear of saying something stupid, or even worse, not saying something stupid and yet social media jumping all over you and the world jumping all over you. I think that's what keeps people away from microphones now.
Well, maybe, you know, I don't give that much thought because I don't care what people think or what other people say, but.
Yeah, but that's this is your job, your life.
Well, I get it, but I don't care.
For lots of people,
if I say something, I really don't care what the reaction is.
Yeah, but for lots of people doing this stuff and doing press conferences is a necessary evil. It's a necessary evil.
And yes, I suppose, but
yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, Masai has been certainly absent from this podcast and
absent from everything, really.
Absent from everything.
Yeah.
But did, as I said earlier, kind of come out of the cocoon and have a news conference and didn't really explain very much of anything.
Well, I actually went down and watched it. It was time to get out of suburbia and actually see other people. And I think that was the most fascinating thing about this, was that everybody was thrilled to be in a public place with other people. The one thing I would say is that it started about a half hour late, which was stupid. But Masai went up there by himself. There was no real formal announcement that in any way that saying congratulations on your new contract and congratulations on your new position, congratulations on this and congratulations on that. No announcement. Larry Tannenbaum sat in the front row. Dale Lastman sat in the front row. And there was really no acknowledgement that Masai has a new contract. And there was only one microphone and only one chair. And then Masai, and I don't really know the guy, so it's easier for me to analyze every word. And then Masai, about 3 minutes in, said, you know, this really isn't about me. Well, hold on. Who are we here for then? I mean, this, I don't want this to be about me. And he was very gracious. He thanked his family.
He's that kind of guy.
Yeah, he was very gracious. But he said, this isn't about me. Wrong. This is all about you, Masai.
100%.
This is all about you and what role you're going to play and what you've been through the last little while. And is there going to be some nugget of information that tells us what a vice chairman does or what an all, you know, I mean, and, you know, what your role is and how much, I mean, is he now at a point where he doesn't have to worry about day to day? I don't think that's the way he works, but does this mean Bobby Webster has a bigger job than he used to have?
No, I don't think so.
But to me, the reverberation of, you know, I this isn't about me. Stuck with me through the whole press conference.
Well, you know, the intriguing thing about the way this whole thing has been set up, and I want to preface this by saying no disrespect to Webster at all. Who I'm sure is a smart guy and does a great job. And if for no other reason, then I don't think Masai would have him around as his sidekick if he didn't. Having said that, it has always been my assertion that every single string in this organization is pulled by Masai Ujiri. Mm-hmm. Every trade that is made is effectively done by, or at the very least involved and approved by Masai Ujiri. Mm-hmm. So while Webster is the general manager, the de facto general manager, it's Masai Ujiri who's responsible for all that stuff. More than a normal president of an organization would be, who would essentially, he has to rubber stamp and approve what the general manager does, but really doesn't get that involved.
Right. And
Shanahan as an example.
Yeah, although I would tell you, you're right. You're right. But at the same time, I think that we've seen this in all of sports, is that in order to try to keep people involved and keep strong people, what's happened is, I think we've seen this in business too, is that titles now have been abused. And I don't mean that. Sure. They've been abused because really, Bobby Webster isn't the general manager. He's the assistant general manager.
Thank you.
And Masai is still the vice chairman, the president
and general manager.
Right. Yeah. The only guy, I will tell you right now, the only guy in our time that I think calls a spade a shovel in this type of thing is Lou. Lou just says, no, I want to be the president. I want to be this, and I want to be the general manager. And that way, there's no question about the line of authority in the organization. Because as you talked about with Brendan and Kyle, you know, whose team is this? Is it? I think there are days that Brendan wants it to be his team, and I think there are days that Kyle thinks it's his team.
I don't get that sense. I mean, you may know better than I. I get the sense that
this is Kyle's team.
This is Dubas's team, and Shanahan rubber stamps most, if not everything, as you always do. A general manager has to answer to the president, yeah. But generally the president stays out of the way of the general manager and his decisions.
Well, I agree with you, except when Brendan stands up and makes comments. He doesn't make very money anymore because I think he got caught in a couple. Early on, and particularly in the William Nylander negotiation. And so that becomes, we do think that it's Kyle's team, but I don't think there's any question. And this is not a knock at the way the authority goes with the basketball club, but this, you're right. This is Masai's team. There's no doubt that this is Masai's team.
Well, look, Webster doesn't do anything. I'm quite positive. Webster doesn't do anything without getting Masai's approval. The question I have is, does Masai go to anybody? Does he go to ownership? Does he go to Larry Tannenbaum? I'm guessing he probably doesn't go to Bell and Rogers, but, you know, Larry's around there.
Yeah.
I assume they have a good relationship. I wonder if he needs any of Larry's approval for just general moves of the team.
Well, no, but when I worked at MLSE, the system worked such that you built your business plan, and albeit this, the company is a much different company now. But you built your business plan, you projected your budget, you went to the board, you outlined your business plan, and whether it was Pat Quinn used to try to do it in one page, you know, Glenn Grunwald used to do it in 50. And if it got approved, then you didn't need to go anywhere else to go to get permission to do other things. It's when you exceeded your plan, when your plan changed,
right?
You know, so when you wanted to spend more money in the budget than you had budgeted, you'd have to go back to the board for approval to get that money.
Well, of course, yeah.
And that's really the only time in the way the MLSE board used to work. That's what happened. So there was no ever any question that who was in charge of the hockey club at that point, whether it was Pat Quinn or even for a short period of time, John Ferguson, Brian Burke. When Brian was in charge, there was, once he got his plan approved, then it was Brian Burke's team to execute the plan. And that's the same thing with Kyle. I guarantee you that's the same thing with Kyle and Brendan.
So before we get off the Masai conversation, let me ask you this one thing. It seems clear to me that Masai Ujiri, for obvious reasons, has a soft spot for African players who were born there,
sure,
probably started to play there, even if they came to North America and went to school in the U.S., he has a soft spot for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any way critical of the quality of the talent. I'm not sure he gives players preferential treatment. I have no reason to believe he does. I think it is smart to explore and exploit, for lack of a better term, new regions where the game that you're playing is growing, mm-hmm. much as the Blue Jays did with the Dominican Republic.
Sure.
In the very early years. They were one of the leaders, maybe them and the Dodgers, in mining prospects from the Dominican. Mm-hmm. And Masai has certainly been that guy in the NBA when it comes to Africa. But is there too much preference there? Does he go a little too far? Is it more about providing an opportunity for, albeit deserving, young players rather than finding the best player available? Have you given any thought to that?
There's certainly some accent put on all of the programs that have been put in place for African players. And I suspect, and you know, it's funny because now that you mentioned it, even yesterday, even some of the graphics that were used in the press conference area, the Giants of Africa was a big part of it as well, which obviously Masai is a major, major player in.
Well, and we, and you know,
we applaud that. We applaud that.
Of course we do.
Yeah.
Of course we do.
So the issue becomes, in the end, it's not really a problem if you win. It's not not and the problem is the wrong word. It's not really an issue if you win. So when people started to think that when Pascal Siakam, who I think was at New Mexico and then but came out and played and started to learn the game, the NBA game, so patiently, there was a real, he's getting better every time. So it obviously works. And I think that that's where you have to say, okay, listen, Masai, at a certain point, we trust what you're thinking. We trust what you're doing. He does have a blank check. He has a blank check right now, but that blank check will be removed if the team doesn't win. And right now he has the ability to do that. The other thing I would say is that I think that Masai's influence is even in this company, in MLSE, is even beyond the basketball team. I think his
influence. Well, I think culturally, the way he has
tremendously, and I think that's that you've hit the key thing is that he has his belief in diversity. I think now ripples through the whole organization with all the sports. I think it ripples through the organization in the tower. And I think that that's one of the reasons why MLSE really believes that it's important to make sure that Masai stayed, was that he has put them on the cutting edge of what a professional sports organization should look like and act. And I think that's important for what he brings to this organization. I mean, let's face it. He has sat in with the hockey guys on trade deadlines. He has sat in with the hockey guys at free agency so they can share information. How do you deal with these things? What is your philosophy? So his influence is bigger than basketball at MLSE now.
I don't dispute that. I just wonder whether at times I'm almost reluctant to say this because I don't want it to sound like it's critical. I'm asking the question. I'm not making a statement. But does he sometimes give some kind of preference to African-born players and potentially at his own cost?
I would frame it another way, is that perhaps he's ahead of the curve.
Well, and I acknowledge that right at the beginning.
Perhaps he's ahead of the curve.
He was at the head of the curve.
Sure.
Or was ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
As the Blue Jays were with the Dominican players. And really? Now... Everybody is Dominican players.
In fact, I would say that Masai's influence isn't just at the NBA level. I think Masai's had that influence with African-born players going to colleges in the United States.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And yeah. and look, we all applaud his commitment and his yeah. efforts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic thing.
Yeah.
It's just thought I'd throw it out there because we have never actually discussed this. Is it possible that sometimes you get narrow vision and you're focused on finding somebody that nobody else knows more than looking at what everybody else thinks?
Yeah.
And clearly Masai Ujiri has proven, especially with his drafting, that he does not follow the crowd. He almost never takes the guy you think everybody thinks he's going to take.
Right.
And I don't think that's because he thinks he's smarter. I think it's because he is smarter.
Well, and the other thing is, I think that he's a very pragmatic businessman. You know, he spoke yesterday very eloquently about his relationship with Kyle Lowry, and then talked about how he and Kyle had some great heart-to-heart discussions in Tampa. And, you know, he did believe that Kyle wanted to stay, but Kyle wanted to stay if they maintain that level of veteran player to continue to win now. And quite obviously, that's not what Masai is interested in. They wanted to get younger. They want to rebuild. He never used the word rebuild. But that's quite frankly where he sees this organization going, so that it has a long-term success rate as yeah. opposed to just over the next year or two. Well, if Kyle was under contract for two more years.
So Masai Ujiri is here for a long time, maybe for life. And yet we don't know how much he's going to make or how long his contract is.
I think it's at least 10 plus, right?
Years?
No.
Million?
Yeah.
I think it's much higher than that.
You do, huh?
I think it might be 15.
Wow.
Well, I think it's plus. 12 for sure. Well, wow. Jackson got 12 with the Knicks, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that bar means, but I'm yeah. guessing he's in that range.
Wow.
But I don't know. It's a pure guess, John. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Blue Jays, logos, other things when we continue after these messages. Well, it has been a struggle over the last week for the Toronto Blue Jays. They go on the road after an 11-2, I think it was, homestand, filled with optimism.
Piss and vinegar, really.
I was going to use that exact phrase.
Yeah.
But they come home limping and having lost ground in the race, having given up 16 runs in two games to the Washingtons, who essentially waved the white flag 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Okay, it's a road game, but and we're back to exactly where we have been all year. And that is, this team can hit well enough. Their starting pitching, as a general rule, is good enough. Their bullpen is horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't doubt for a second that Ross Atkins and Shapiro can see what we see. Of course they can. Just they can't do anything about it.
The inconsistency though, Bob, I mean, like this is like riding the roller coaster at the CNE though. This is the other thing is, just as an aside, you know, when you go to the West Coast, you normally come home right away. Give yourself after, because you know.
No, they had to come back and play in Washington.
And having to play in Washington, that's what I'm saying. Having to play in Washington rather than coming home. Gosh, you know, I know this is a strange year for scheduling, and I know it's a strange year for a team that's had three home stadiums. But that really that threw them. I think threw them for a little bit of a kilter too.
Well, it may have. You know, but I mean, look, they gave up 16 runs, and essentially it was the bullpen on both days that blew it.
But hold on. We're going to clip that out. We're going to clip that out and play that 118 times.
Well,
that's the story. That is the story of the season.
It is the story of the season. But I mean, we just went through 2 days of here we go again.
Yeah.
And there just does not seem to be a way to fix it. Now, you've got the other trade deadline coming up.
Right.
It's more difficult to make deals. You're making them only within your own league without waivers.
Right.
So you now have half as many teams to deal with, probably a lot less than half as many, because you really aren't going to do deals with teams in your own division. So now you got 8 or 9 other teams that you can talk to. I don't suspect that we're going to see very much of anything.
No,
we're certainly not going to find, there's not going to be a savior. And this bullpen is so bad right now. They don't need one guy. They need five. They need five. The way the game is played today, like they yanked, who started yesterday? I forget.
Okay.
Another pitcher taken out with less than 90 pitches at the end of the fifth inning.
Yeah.
Well, you know, okay, I get that long term. I get the, you know, analytics stuff. But when you have a bullpen that is as bad as this one is, you can't run out four different pitchers and think one of them is not going to get bombed. And that's what's happening over and over and over and over again.
To me, the season in a nutshell was Saturday night in Seattle, where Hand, bases loaded, 4 balls, walked in the winning run. That was the season.
It wasn't the end of the season, but it was typical of what has happened.
Well, yeah, that was, if you said give me a snapshot of what's gone right or wrong with the Jays, the wrong picture was Saturday night, in my opinion.
Well, I would say to you that it'd be very easy to figure out, you know, we may have a difference of opinion, but if I asked you who the best guy out of the bullpen is, if I asked you who the worst guy out of the bullpen is, it might be an 8-way tie.
Yeah.
You know?
But it was Barrios, by the way, that started last night.
Oh, it was Barrios.
Barrios, yeah.
Yeah. He threw 88 pitches. He's not 21 years old. I don't understand that. I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
If you have a gangbuster bullpen, okay, I could at least accept it.
Yeah.
But when you got a bunch of guys that bring kerosene to the mound, you know, instead of putting out the fire, they're inflaming it or creating it. They bring matches and kerosene to the mound. That's a prescription for disaster. I want to get to something else here before we let people go. The National Hockey League apparently is now committed.
Yes.
To putting advertising logos on uniforms.
A year from now, we'll be talking about the introduction for 32 teams of a 3.5 by 3 inch square on the upper breast of the sweater.
And
which, by the way, the NBA has had one of these for 2 years now.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big. I think it's slightly
smaller. And it's not a patch. It's actually, you know, right in and
it's part of the logo
embossed into the sweater.
So the plan is for each individual team to be permitted to sell this.
Correct.
The space.
Yeah. Nobody knows their market. I mean, if the league did it, I don't think you'd get as much money. Because
what do you guess they're going to get for that? What do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm just going to assume that they probably will be at the top of the food chain on this.
Yeah. Toronto, Montreal, Rangers, Detroit will be at the top of the
league. Yeah. I was going to say Rangers maybe, but look at Toronto will get more than Montreal will. Ooh. They have more eyeballs following them. I think New York will probably be safe, but I think the Maple Leafs will be. So what if you were running MLSE, which I know you used to do, although you didn't have the title.
Yeah, that's right. That's good because our buddy Petty will be phoning and saying, "When did you take my job? You know what happened?"
Well, we all know Petty that Shannon ran the place until he just got too annoying and he had to get booted out.
Too annoying was right. That's the key.
So, what would you charge? What's that worth?
I don't know. Let me just preface it before. So, I sat in a board of governors meeting in 2005. And there were 30 teams in the league at that point. And this topic came up about when are we going to sell sponsorship? And I think it was Charles Wong who was running the Islanders at the time.
That makes sense. that he would bring this up.
When are we going to sell? When are we going to sell advertising on the sweaters? And there was a little bit of pushback, but the commissioner said at that point, he says, you know, we're not there yet. We're not ready yet. But the number that came out at that point, league wide, was we probably need close to $250 to $300 million a year.
So almost $10 million a team.
$10 million a team. Now, but I actually thought that the league was contemplating doing it for everyone. But now that the teams have been assigned to do it, and basically they've given them a year to do their market research, to do their pitches to major sponsors, and then unveil it a year from now. You'd have to think that what occurs in Toronto is close to $10 to $15 million. Every game televised, you know, every time you have a close-up of a player, you're going to see you. It's a good question that we should have. Not that it's a full podcast, but if we ever found somebody that there are people out there that actually measure signage on visual signage, whether it's in arena or on television. That's how, as you know, Bob, that's how golfers get a lot of money.
Well, and our pal Brian Cooper, has been in that business on both sides of it. I mean, when he was with MLSE, he sold that kind of stuff. And now he represents clients like Scotia, I think, who buy that kind of stuff.
Right. So the question becomes, what are you going to get? If you're going to get that in Toronto, what are you going to get in Columbus? What are you going to get in Minnesota? What are you going to get in Arizona, where there isn't near the reach media wise of the team? Well, then in the end, it all gets put into hockey related revenue, and there's revenue sharing. It's split between the players and the owners.
Yeah, sure.
So it doesn't matter.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is it a worthwhile endeavor? And, you know, at $10 million a team, and it might be higher than that.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be much higher than that. What are you giving up? Or are you just essentially whoring your product?
Well, look at the Premier League.
I don't care about another league.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, there are precedents. Well, the NBA, the Premier League, NBA, you know.
Premier League is nowhere near what other leagues are.
Oh, no,
there are other leagues.
It's blatantly.
Well, where they're just covered in logos.
Yeah.
Well, European hockey.
But that's, again, that I think that, you know, that's at a different level. This is one where, by the way, I don't think the NHL would have done this if the NBA hadn't done it first. I think, you know, the fact
that you're probably right.
The NBA going out and doing it and the other thing to know is that the little logos of sponsors on the helmets in the NHL that, you know, when we had Bill on, he said, yeah, they're probably here to stay. That was $1 million a team at that point. And you have to wonder if it's going to go up per market for the the foreseeable future. So, listen. If you believe you're sitting at home and you believe you're a purist in the game and you see a logo, for the sake of argument, Bell on Montreal Canadiens, if you see a logo for Bell on Canadiens, will you stop watching? Will it tick you off? And so if the answer is, well, I'm going to continue watching, then there's not a problem.
Well, obviously, we have to get into a much longer conversation than I'm prepared to today.
Yeah. Well, but do you think you're a capitalist? It wouldn't bother you, would it?
No, it does.
Oh, it does.
I mean, I there are limitations.
But if you were a professional golfer, Bob, I would sell your RBC. You'd have your RBC logo on the shoulder.
I don't know how much I get for it.
Well,
I'd have an RBC logo on me right now. I'd have one.
Note to sales department.
I'd have it tattooed on my forehead if you paid me enough money for it. The question is how much?
That's right.
And I think $10 million in a league where you're talking well over $100 million a team in costs and much more than that in revenue. To add 10%, 5%, 2.5%, depending on the team, to put a logo on your uniform, I think there's something sacrosanct about that. It actually does bug me. Now, if the Toronto Maple Leafs could get $100 million for some dumbass corporation to put their logo on their uniforms, $100 million.
Not a year, not a season.
A year.
Oh, well.
A year.
I'm not spending
at that amount. I would say, okay, good. Yeah. Because that's, you know, I like to use the phrase life-changing money. Everybody likes money and everybody wants money, but sometimes you have to say no. Sometimes you have to say, it's not worth it to me.
Right.
For that amount, for whatever reason, somebody comes along with life-changing money, you have to say yes. It's the reason why I worked at Rogers for as many years as I did, purely and simply. Not because I had a great love affair with any of those characters, although there were many people there I liked. They offered me life-altering money.
Yeah.
You got to say yes to that.
Yeah.
But less than that.
So I
think $10 million means nothing to the Toronto Maple Leafs, nothing to Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. It is an insignificant, it's loose change in your pocket.
But let's say on average $300 million a team. For the whole
$10 million a team.
$10 million a team. So that's more money that you're getting from Turner. That's more money that you're getting from TNT for the season. So
it's not an either or.
I'm saying you measure where that type of money is in the system, and that's $300 million is a pretty good number for a league wide number.
Here's what I know will not happen, but I would like to see happen. I would like to see some team like the Toronto Maple Leafs stand up at the end of this and say, you know what? This franchise has been in existence for almost 100 years. We're not going to put a logo. We're not going to put advertising on our uniform.
Right.
We've never had it. Mm-hmm. We don't need the money. It's going to go into a drawer and collect dust.
Right.
Our heritage, our reputation, our history is more important to us. Everybody else can do what they want to do.
Right.
We don't object to that.
Right.
But we are not going to take that money. Now, the chances of that happening are
negligible.
Yeah. No, they're less than negligible. They are donut, bagel, borscht, nothing.
Right. Well, if Manchester United could do it, if Manchester United can do it.
I'm waiting for that moment. Yeah. If that happens.
Well, they've done it. Manchester United have done it.
No, if the Maple Leafs do that, I will stand up and applaud.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if they take the money, whatever.
You know,
we know what you are. We're just not going to call you that. You're just a bunch of greedy bastards. And okay, fine. And we get sucked into watching your crummy team play. But go ahead, take the money. But it would really be shockingly nice.
It ain't gonna happen.
If somebody said, no, if it was $100 million, we'd take it because that's life altering. 10, 15, to hell with it.
Yeah. Now, that's, by the way, I did a Twitter poll yesterday on this very topic and it got probably one of the largest voting, more than almost 9,000 votes in a day. And almost 60% of people said no, they didn't want them on the sweaters.
Of course they don't.
Yeah. So
why would you want it?
No. I don't.
And it offers no competitive advantage either, which is what most fans are interested in. Hey, we can buy another player.
Well, that,
well everybody can buy another player.
The 40% that said yes, they said, well, it'll help the cap. I don't think it's going to help the cap.
What do you care what the cap is?
Well,
what does a fan care what the cap is?
That's, but you see here, but this is another story.
Oh, well, let's not get into this.
There's another story. We're making too many numbers, analytics and cap stuff, and people don't tell stories about people anymore. So
enough.
Okay.
The break. We'll wrap it up after these.
Oh, no, by the way, somebody's going to phone and put a logo right on your shoulder there.
Depends on how much.
That's right.
Look, John, I never said I couldn't be bought. I just said I wasn't cheap. Back after these messages. McCown and Shannon with a quick goodbye here. I want to point out for those that are watching on YouTube or wherever, like I'm in my office still, but it's empty.
Yeah. Except the Ohio State Buckeye sign.
Just going to mention that. Well, wait a sec. I got to go the other way. Oh. I have my Stony Ridge sign still up there too.
Yeah. Why did you sell those with the house or something or what?
No, I'm taking them with me eventually. They'll be at the new joint when I debut there. But I couldn't bring the Ohio State sign down. I just thought, I got to leave it up there.
Oh, please.
I thought it might piss you off, but.
No, I don't. Listen, you know.
But you know who would piss off?
Morosi. Well, he's on next week. So.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
So. Well, I'll make sure that it has prominent mention.
Either that or just, you know, stitch it to your shirt.
Now. I actually have something. I have that same logo.
Oh, there you go.
It's a sticker.
Put it on your shirt tomorrow or next week when Morosi's in. By the way, tomorrow, speaking of making money and professional sports teams making money.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we're going to talk to the Canadian member of parliament who introduced Bill C-218, which is the individual sport gambling bill that will be put into law. It's amazing how this happens during an election campaign, put into law on the 28th of August. Kevin Waugh from Saskatoon.
I actually dug out I made a presentation to a commission, a federal political commission, 15 years ago, maybe, on the legalization of sports betting. And I actually, when I was getting ready for the move, I actually found
The PowerPoint presentation?
No, it was typed out in a piece of paper.
Wow.
I actually found it.
Wow.
And it wound up getting put into a box.
Well, so you don't have it for tomorrow?
I don't have it for tomorrow.
Oh, it's, way to go.
It's in one of about 200 boxes that were packed. Two trucks.
I'm glad you sold the furniture with the house then.
You're telling me?
Yeah.
There would have been a train pull up in front of me.
Wow. Okay.
All right, let's get out of
here. Enough of your move.
We'll talk about, maybe we will, maybe we won't, Hard Knocks on another day.
Well, the NFL's not going away, Bob. It's.
Well, it may not be, but I don't know about the show. Well, we'll get to that.
All right.
Have a swell day, everybody. And for Shannon McCown, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.